we were the stars of the theatrical group. And during, before each big football game, they would have what they called a pep fest. Yeah. And that's where Paul and I would impersonate professors, the Hullion, and mimic them. And they looked forward to that thing as the greatest event of the year.
I think you have a nice little Hullion, a straight-laced classical scholar.
College.
Huh? He was really
men and women of the College of Delaware.
Yeah. Real Episcopalian.
A real wasp.
Now
we pulled him off.
Now you graduated the university in 26. And then you decided on law.
Yes.
There's no question
about
it.
Oh, there was no doubt about it.
Now how did you...
Would
you remember the graduation and all that sort of stuff?
No, I don't remember the graduation because I did not take my ROTC, which I had to have in my junior year, because my mother was dying. And that made a very tough year for me in 1926.
But you had to take it then.
So after graduation, I then went to Plattsburgh in the senior year. And that's where I met and went with, and Rosenberg had to do it then, see, because he was entering his senior year. I was already
This graduated. Was a requirement because it was a land grant college.
Absolutely. I had to have my 3 years.
It wasn't the prejudice against war.
No.
See, I couldn't join the Boy Scouts because of the uniform.
Yeah.
This was
a 3-year requirement.
Three-year
requirement. So you became a second lieutenant in the reserves.
So you did not graduate then. You're supposed to.
Well, I graduated, but I couldn't get my diploma.
And okay, so then you graduate in 26.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to go to Plattsburgh when?
I went in the latter part of June, July and August.
You had to live up there?
Oh, sure. I loved it.
How long were you there?
About 2.5 months.
2.5 months.
Yeah, I loved it.
So you crammed all that into 2.5 months?
Yeah.
And then you got your diploma.
Then I came back, got my diploma, entered Penn Law School.
And Rosenberg went. Charlie went with you.
Yeah, Charlie was with me at Plattsburgh.
He lived out on Delaware Avenue, I remember.
Yes, they had it.
He was a mixed-up guy.
Oh yes, he was.
And then law was firm. Now the question is, where you go?
Yeah.
You know why you picked law?
Well, I'll tell you. I've got some correspondence here from a man by the name of Byrne, who is the real historian of the Frank case, the Leo Frank case in Georgia. You remember that?
I remember it, yeah.
That inspired me. There were two things that inspired me. The Leo Frank case, and he's written letters to me, some beautiful letters that I got from him.
You know about the Leo Frank case?
No, I know.
It's a very serious one. Was he lynched down south?
He was convicted, and after conviction, there was a confession by a colored man who had committed the crime. The governor then pardoned him, and the people of Georgia lynched him. I've got a set of books here of the address to the jury by the respective counsel and the newspaper clippings that come over. It's world famous cases. And I want you to look at it. It's thrilling. The other case that always impressed me is the one my mother always told me.
Mendel Bayless.
And Mendel Bayless was the subject of a story I wrote for the Wisp.
Oh, really?
Which was a lousy story, but it was printed.
these are the two great cases, the Mendel Bayless case.
They were my great influence.
Yeah.
And I decided, and then I felt that I was articulate enough to do my thing. I went to Penn. And my friends, Simon went to Harvard. Howard Miller went to Harvard. In those days, with our grades, which were above average, we had A's and B's averages, we could have gone to any law school we wanted. It wasn't a question LSAT like it is today. What's your law school aptitude tests and all that sort of thing.
But what about the University of Delaware? Did it have such a good reputation? I mean, today
in those
it
days,
depends so much on where you come from.
Engineering
was number one. Our English course was number one. Because we had Dr. Seifert, who had written all kinds of books on the Bible, on drama, on Shakespeare, on Chaucer, and that sort of thing.
Jefferson's daughter was a great thing.
Oh, he was just outstanding.
But Did we trouble getting into law school?
No.
As a Jew?
No. Well,
you didn't come up against
no,
that?
No, wait a minute. I didn't come up against it. I understood that there was, but I did not come up against it.
Okay. Now, coming to law school costs money.
Oh.
What did you do about that?
Suffered.
You worked?
Yes, I worked at Llewellyn's Drugstore in Philadelphia every afternoon.
You lived up there?
I lived up there. And I worked in the afternoons. I worked for $10 a week every afternoon. It would cost me car fare and at least 50 cents for lunch every time I was there. I was left
see,
with
my brother was
three or $4.
My brother was ahead of you, wasn't he?
Yes. He was studying psychology, wasn't he?
Yeah, my poor mother didn't know what the hell it was.
Yeah, I know, but I remember that time. Yeah.
As a Bible. They get around. Mrs. Levy, Charlie Levy's mother, and the Eisman, we get around. My son's a doctor, my son's a dentist.
Yeah.
And what are you? That poor woman didn't know what the hell he was taking. She couldn't
true.
Even pronounce a goddamn word.
That's,
you know?
That's true.
But a lot of them worked, see, some of those fellows worked in the railroad station here. But you went to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And you worked in this drugstore.
I
what was a three-year course?
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah. And don't forget, at that time I was courting my wife in Newark, New Jersey.
Newark.
I saw her about 4 times a year. I went with her for 4.5 years.
Thanks to Charlie Rosenberg.
As against all kinds of competition.
You know that
little saying from one of the songs? When I'm not near the man I love the man I'm near. And that's what always worried the hell out of me.
Going to Newark, New Jersey was quite a jaunt.
What?
That was quite a jaunt to Newark.
Oh, well,
Jersey.
You know how I would go to Newark, New Jersey? Some tailor on 4th and Tatnall had some jalopy. And he'd have relatives that he'd want to visit in New York. They'd leave at 11 o'clock at night. I'd go with him in the car with the whole family, and then they'd leave me off in Newark, and I'd arrive at about 2 in the morning. And,
there's one thing I forgot. What were your activities in the YMHA, if any? The third team. Any at all?
Well, when you're
talking... What's his name? He was a basketball player. What did you tell me his name?
Jacobson. Well, when you're talking about the YMHA on 3rd Street, that was when I was going... I was then in high school.
Yeah.
I was then in high school. The big stalwarts in those days were... Jake Shapiro, who was studying to be a doctor. You know, that was something. Jake Shapiro was studying to be a doctor.
There's a French thing.
Yes. And then there was a fellow by the name of Abe... Not Shapiro. But he was the playboy. He was the fancy-dancy guy. And, of course, everybody played pool. I never played pool. I didn't know how to play pool.
Charlie, where was Charlie? Ahead of you, or where was Charlie leading you?
Charlie was in my class.
In your class.
Yeah. Charlie was in my class. But well, you hang out socially with the girls, and this was where everybody went. And the activity, as you know, was Second Street. It was Rubenstein's Delicatessen. Bakery and all that. Everything was around there. That's where the girls.
Brown had a restaurant there.
What? Brown, sure. As a matter of fact, after my mother died, I used to eat at Brown's restaurant. Yeah, on 2nd and Chipley.
But you had no connection with the Y at all, YMHA?
No, no.
Not in the debating club, anything like that?
No, no.
I used to debate Philip Cohen.
Yeah.
And when he had me up against the wall, and I did, I would say, do you know what Darwin said? I made it up. I don't know what the hell Darwin said. And that impressed the judges, the fact that I could quote Darwin. I made it damn
good.
Well, and now what about the Jewish activities? Were you involved with the Young Judea at all?
Was there such a thing? I don't even know they had that.
Yeah, the Young Judea, but you were not involved.
No, I was not.
You two both, yeah. No. Soon after you went to college, okay.
Yeah.
Then you graduated. So you were not involved in the YMHA activities at all?
No.
You would be much older, see. And then Shul, of course, was just perfunctory.
Right? Right, sure. Sure. I didn't go Friday nights or Saturdays, just the high holidays.
And that was the Chesed Shalemus?
Yes.
You never got mixed up with the Arbeiter Ring?
With the what?
The radicals, the Arbeiter Ring?
No.
Well, you did.
Well, we had, well, of course, the shul was right next door to it.
Right next door to it, yeah.
And so was the Catcher's Bathhouse. You had one on one side and had the...
Did you go there much?
Yeah, a couple of times.
But Dad, you did go every day after your mother died, right?
Oh, of course, of course. As a matter of fact, I not only went every day after my mother died, but while my mother was dying, which I knew was going to be the case, and I was a senior in high school, in college in Delaware, I would take the train from Newark to Wilmington, and then take the train from Wilmington to Philadelphia every day with my books and did my work on the, and then I'd look at my mother and know she's going to die, and it was a terrible.
When did she die?
1926, March 19th.
How old was she?
52.
52? When did your father die?
My father died when he was about 76, 74. I never did know his age, but he died in the 40s, I don't recall.
When did you...
June 9th, 1926.
Here in federal court?
Yes.
Did you have to take a course?
Pardon me?
Did you have to take any?
No.
Who was on the bench, Morris?
Morris. Yes.
And the son of a bitch, Mahaffey.
Yes.
Who said to me one time, I don't know if I told you, he said to me one time, aren't we getting too many Jews in this bar association?
Oh, God.
I didn't know if you knew I was Jewish or not.
Oh, God.
I think it was something that after you had some case, I don't know what the hell it was, and...
It might have been the Louis Davis case, which was quite the case at that time. You remember Louis Davis, the jeweler, who was charged with using the mails to defraud?
I don't remember what it was, but...
But I had
I thought he knew I was Jewish, but he made that crack. You see, in those days, we never went to the judge the way you could do now.
Yeah.
And I never... Wouldn't dare go into the chamber.
Neil's chamber? You never stepped in there.
I was only there twice. Once he showed me his wig that this fellow Sharp had given, Sharp? No, Smart.
Oh, Smart, sure. Smart, the guy became a millionaire as a result.
Bitch, yeah. But I remember he made that crack about other enough Jews.
Yeah.
Well, how did people react when you changed your name? How did the Jewish people react?
No reaction. They didn't react to it.
Did a lot of people do it?
I don't think a lot of people did it.
Well, not to cut him down to size, but at that time, you know, he wasn't a big mocker. It wasn't a big thing.
It was nothing.
No.
And they accepted it. Don't forget, I changed it just in time to enter Penn.
What about your father? What did he do?
Nothing. But my relatives, I had one relative, a cousin. He's now a multi-millionaire. He was went into the chemical business. They all changed it. They all changed it to Young up there.
Oh.
I haven't been in touch with them, but they've all changed. But I knew they did.
Interesting thing.
But I changed it not because it was just coincidental that I was entering Penn. I changed at the time I became 21 years of age.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're naturalized on as young.
Sure.
You knew Eddie Cannon.
Of course.
Where was he in relation to you at that time?
Well, Eddie had been practicing maybe 5 years.
Already?
Yes.
Funny thing, he changed his name. There were two brothers. One changed and the other didn't. They were passing each other like that.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Either that or the Arsh family's involved somehow or another. Okay, and then what kind of a time did you have in law school, all right? Easy, hard? Or, of course it was hard.
Law school? No, I loved law school. I loved law school because I lived in a nice boarding house in what was then around 33rd and Powell, where Drexel Institute is now, which was the top neighborhood. In fact, they had their mansions with stables still back there that they used for garages with their big cars. It was a beautiful neighborhood. And I had great roommates. Sobloski was my roommate, whose father owned all the theaters, the Warner Brothers Sobloski Theaters. And during recreation, we would go to the Earl Theater free, see the show, and I remember we'd go backstage and meet Mae Murray and meet all the celebrities, and so I had a great association. And of course I worked hard. I'd go to school, I'd get up in the morning and I'd go to school till about 3 o'clock, and then I would do my studies till about 11, 12 o'clock at night, and sometimes I'd go to Llewellyn's every week. Friday, Saturday, I'd have to go to Llewellyn's to work, but I enjoyed it. And then, of course, I always brought hand down to the football games and that sort of, where I got the money from, don't ask me, but I, my
father. Well, now, who was your, is it your term preceptor here?
What?
Who was your link here in Wilmington?
Biggs and John Biggs, the old man.
The old man.
Jam Biggs and Percy Warren Green.
Now, Biggs had an office in this building?
Yeah.
Office here, yeah.
Yeah.
John, his son, was up the street, I believe. My first dirty book I saw from John Biggs, Memoirs of Fanny Hill. He said, take this and wrap it up. And there used to be a guy in town selling pornographic books.
I've got a letter here from John Biggs thanking me for sending him, which he thought...
Who, the old man?
No, present John Biggs. Thanking me for sending him a copy of the agreement that I read to the Delaware Bar Association of my employment with his father and himself and Green, that I was to, I was permitted to use the desk in the waiting room, which looked like some toilet, and like some sheriff's office in some godforsaken place, at no salary, and that I was to be subject to call for any work that either John Biggs, his son, or Biggs wanted done, and that I could be dismissed on 30 days' notice.
Was it the fifth floor? What floor was it on?
It was on the fifth floor.
Fifth floor.
On the fifth floor. And do you know what the great achievement was when you got out of law school and became a lawyer in Delaware to have your name on the door?
Yeah.
You weren't a member, you were nothing, but if you had your name on the door, you've achieved something.
So is it proper to say you clerked for these guys?
Yes.
That was for...
I got nothing.
That was for John Biggs Sr.?
John Biggs Jr.
Junior?
And Percy Green.
Percy Warren Green.
Yeah.
He was like an old lady sometimes.
But,
so then when you were admitted to the bar, you had to come back here, take the bar exam?
Yeah.
And you got difficulty there?
No.
There was no prejudice there? You know.
Well, you know, we were subject, you know, before you took the bar exam, you were called into the room of a man by the name of Janvier.
Oh yeah, I remember Janvier.
And Janvier and a man by the name of Evans, who represented all sorts of estates and became a multimillionaire, Judge Speakman, Robert H. Richards.
Senior.
Sat in a semicircle.
Oh, God.
You sat in a hard chair in the center.
No.
The first
in his office.
In Janvier's office, Janvier. Which also looked like a second-rate toilet. And you sat there, the first question they asked you was, well, the first question he asked me, why did you change your name? So that was number one. The second question, the other question,
what'd
which
you
is,
say?
Well, I said I did it for convenience, and it's easier to remember, easier to handle. And of course, in later years, when you see the great stars of the football game teams, you might as well have kept it to Jablowski or Janowitz or whatever it was. But those were different times. Now, the other question was, why do you want to study law?
That's a good question.
And Reardon gave him one answer, which kept him out for 1 year. I want to make money. So they didn't permit Reardon to take the bar exam.
Smart guy.
I want to make money.
Well, this was an examination for what now?
Just as I am now on the Board of Bar Examiners, we interview the applicants. And we say, well...
There weren't many Jews then, though.
No, well, tell you the Jews. Finger was the outstanding lawyer.
Amazing man.
Joe Handler. Was the only, but prior to that, you had Victor Barsky, and you had Emil Tomkus, and period. That was it.
Finger was the only visible man. Who
the only one, yeah.
An amazing man, Finger. Now, Finger was under the, with Richards.
Yes, he clicked for Richards. He was a stenographer.
So there wasn't any anti-Semitic traits in Richards, do you think?
No, but I mean, you
it's
know.
Subjective, yeah.
Aaron Finger was a great friend because he was a great scholar and a great lawyer.
You helped him a lot.
Yeah, you're darn right. One of the biggest cases that they won were Finger's.
Okay,
and
well.
And Emil Tomkus never really practiced.
No,
says,
I don't
never.
Think so.
He handled real estate.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think he ever appeared in court. I don't think Handelman ever. He wasn't a court man.
I got beautiful letters from Aaron.
You know, Mr. Biggs Sr. was named Attorney General by his father, the governor.
I didn't know that. And
Benjamin T. Biggs was governor
yeah.
in 1887,
yeah.
and he needed an Attorney General. In those days, he named his son, And the newspapers kept writing, my son John. You know, they ripped the hell out of him. Now, John was very young then, wasn't he?
Yeah.
The old man was a little disappointed because his son wanted to be a writer.
Yes. Well, you know, we used to have Scott Fitzgerald come treading the boards.
Yeah.
And you know, John wrote a play which never went, he thought he was going to get on.
Yeah, yeah.
Something about, it had to do with Alfred E. Smith. I forgot what it was, but it was a dud. And I used to pull the same, after a while, I did the same thing John Biggs used to do. Whenever he'd leave, he'd say, if Jim Farley calls, tell him I'm over at such and such a place, or if Harris calls from New York. So when I'd leave the office, I'd always say, if Governor so-and-so calls, or United States Senator, Nixon may call next week.
I do the same thing. You know, if a Carter calls me, I'll be back.
Yeah, right. Okay. So I used to do the same thing. But he would get those calls.
Yeah. Well, you know what? He did. They did. Hollywood did send in some people to rewrite his play, but it never went.
He thought it was going to go right on.
It never went. And then you were admitted to the bar when?
September 1929.
And you were associated with...
Well, I was in the office with Biggs and Green.
Biggs and Green. Now, the old Biggs was then kind of...
He was shooting for the judgeship.
Young Biggs, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Even then?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Well,
didn't
I
get
think,
it to Roosevelt.
Oh, yeah, I know. But, we were there a few years.
He got into politics. Now, Percy right. was a Republican, wasn't
yes.
he?
Yes.
And Biggs was a Democrat.
Right.
And you leaned towards the Republican.
Yes. Because they were the ones who were in power.
It wasn't a case of ideology at all.
No. One didn't mean one thing to me.
What do you think would have happened if you had gone to the Democratic side and latched on to Biggs' star? You had a choice.
Yeah.
Two stars.
Yeah, sure. I could have gone to either one. Could have worked with either one. Well, I don't think I could have achieved anything higher than being Attorney General of the State of Delaware.
I don't think so either.
No.
Okay, and then you start off as a lawyer here.
Yeah.
In the same building you're in now.
Yes.
Did you stay here because of the affinity for this old claptrap? It wasn't a bad building.
No, I
tell
you.
Located?
Location, yeah. It is absolutely terrific. I mean, we're a stone's throw from the federal court, the county courts, the banks. We're centrally located. It's a lot to be desired, but...
Hot as hell,
isn't it awful?
But you specialized and you got into court trial cases right away.
Right away.
I used to cover some of your cases.
Yeah, I guess you did.
You handled a lot of liquor cases, right?
Oh, God.
You remember St. Pierre Miquelon?
Oh, sure. Oh, that was the great. Oh, sure. That had to do. They talk about Bromfen being a man of stature and prestige and a philanthropist and all. He was a great big bootlegger that had those boats coming from St. Pierre Miquelon down the coast here.
Now, in the federal court, Morris had gone off the bench after a while.
Yeah.
Neal came on.
Yeah.
He was a character.
Neal.
But do you remember what your first big case was? Okay, when did you get married, by the way, before you lose that?
I got married in 1931, March 22nd.
You already was a young, rising lawyer.
In 31, I was getting there.
You were getting your name in the paper.
Yes, I was in court. I remember Townsend and some of the lawyers we'd eat at the Hob, you know, and they'd say, my God, what do? Get your name in the paper every day. I was in on all these cases almost every day my name was in the paper.
And so married in 1931, and where did you live first?
24th and on 24th Street, 24th and Harrison.
And Charlie married
my wife's sister, Ruth.
Now, was the beginning of the law hard at first, or getting
yes,
trial
cases? Yes, it
was
very hard. When I first got out, I can just
because you were attached to a well-established lawyer.
But that didn't mean
a family. Did that mean anything?
No. Well, it didn't mean anything because I when I got out, Purse Green left for Europe for a 3 month trip,
uh-huh.
And he left all his cases to me, and I handled them, and I got to know them. And then I was assigned in those cases to a lot of the criminal cases for which I got paid $50.
By court.
Murder cases. Notwithstanding all the expense and everything else, it was $50. And then my first year, I can show you, my first year I earned $550. in the practice of law.
Earned.
I earned $550.
No, gross?
Gross. And I,
that
but
was
I,
in 29, that
but
was
I was
20.
The announcer, but I was the announcer for WILM.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's how I could never sustain myself. I not only announced for WILM, I secured the advertising, I wrote the copy, and then I collected. So I would write, I would try to get a contract for 2-3 years. So even after I quit, I was still collecting commissions on my contract. You got 1 second?
Yeah.
That, I don't think I even want this on the record.
Let me ask you a very personal question. How did you become such a Beau Brummel? So you didn't become a schlepper like me. I always impressed that, you know, I'd see Baba. Do you remember Baba there?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. He picked up cases in court.
Yeah.
And I see these lawyers, but how did you get so meticulous in your appearance?
I don't know.
I was impressed in court how meticulous you are.
It just comes natural.
Does it come natural?
Yeah, it just comes natural.
Was your father that way?
He dressed well, but I don't know whether he dressed like I did. But do you remember that case when I represented Herman of the board? And they wrote up an article that the case was there for some 17 days, and Mr. Young did not wear the same suit. And it's in one of the.
That's the rape case.
Was that the rape case?
Uh-huh.
I didn't wear the same suit.
For the four firemen.
Yeah, McGuire, Jones, it's et al.
See, Hagner was in with you.
Yeah, he says me too.
Yeah.
Every time I'd make an objection, he'd say me too.
Who else was there?
Reinhardt. Dave Reinhardt.
Dave Reinhardt, the son.
The son.
Now you seem to drift into the criminal cases. That paid more.
It projected me to the public immediately, and from there everybody. Then I got an awful lot of commercial work and civil litigation, because they figure if you're a trial lawyer, you're a trial lawyer,
yeah.
And so that's how I got to get a lot of civil cases.
But your reputation was on a trial as a trial
a
lawyer.
A trial lawyer.
Trial lawyer.
Yeah. That was it.
Then you got the murder cases and the bootleg cases.
Oh, sure.
Did you get any feedback on the bootleg cases at all?
No. And I was, then I had a terrific string of cases during the time Rabbi Waldman was involved with the, and I represented him. And I want to tell you something, that in that relationship, I think I learned more from Rabbi Waldman than he learned from me.
The
headline was...
You're a better Rabbi Waldman. He was a shochet more than a rabbi,
yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, this was interesting. Rabbi Waldman was charged with violating the...
NRA.
Yeah. What? Not the NRA.
No, it was the...
The food, the three-letter thing.
Yeah.
And they were going to charge him because he was utilizing all the offings, you know, and all that sort of the entrails and everything else for millions of dollars. And remember, Dave Hollett worked for him?
Yeah.
And after the indictment, he wanted to meet with the head of that bureau, and the letters escaped me.
Right, was it rationing?
Right, yeah, it was rationing. Yeah, yeah. And we went to New York, and the headquarters were in the Empire State Building. And counsel was there, the head of the bureau was there, and when we sat down at the table, I was ready to make my real professional pitch when Rabbi Waldman spoke. It was the corniest, it should have been set to music. And he told them of how he came over from this country and how he believes in God and all that sort of thing. He almost had these guys weeping. Well, you know, the bottom line, we settled the whole damn thing for $2,000.
Reminds me of Mr. Gorsuch.
Gorsuch, that's another guy. I don't know him so well, but I know his reputation.
You got a federal case?
Federal case. Yeah.
But that's why you started to represent people downstate, didn't you?
Oh, yes, yes. I appeared against Tunnel in a number of cases.
With Tunnel?
Against Tunnel.
Against Tunnel.
Yeah, Tunnel on one side.
That was a big establishment.
Yeah, oh, sure, for me to come down against Tunnel was really something.
How long did you stay with Green? See, Biggs became a judge.
Yes,
the old man died,
yes,
Biggs became a judge.
And Purse Green accepted years later Deputy Attorney General.
Thank you, yeah.
He became Deputy Attorney General.
But then he could still practice, though, couldn't he?
Yes, yes. And I would say we were there. I was elected in 51. I would say I was with Green from 29 till about 1949. And you know,
oh.
Green became a judge
on
Court of Common Pleas for a long time.
You have something to say? When did you ever think of becoming a judge?
No, never. I don't believe, and it's, I've always had feelers, would I want to accept? I tell you, Speakman was very fond of me and a very close friend. As a matter of fact, he's responsible for my running for Attorney General. I had no idea of running for Attorney General until he said, you're the man. And thank you.
So you're active in the Republican Party then?
Oh, yes. And
were you buddy with Frank DePauw?
What? Frank was a great, he wanted me to run for Attorney General. Yes, I was very close with Minority Gilbert's praised Greenwald, score young.
Is that the Gilbert boys?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm afraid those Scotch tapers are going to hold very much longer.
Oh, this thing.
They're bad. Well, when did you start thinking of actually seriously of running for Attorney General?
One day we were at the Hob.
Who's we?
Judge Speakman, Purse Green, myself, Chris Ward, Sr. Remember Chris Ward, Sr.? And a guy by the name of, I can't think of it now, but I used to have heated discussions with him. He was a big shot in the Delaware Power and Light Company, Pyle,
right.
And a few others, and Speakman said, this is the man that should run for Attorney General. And I was thinking, my God.
What year now, about 50?
This was 49.
49.
And I'm thinking, well, my God, I'm now up there. What in the hell do I want to run for Attorney General? And
the seed was sown.
What?
The seed was sown.
The seed was sown.
Up until then, you had been appearing on conventions and making speeches.
And yes. And I
represented,
do you remember, the Republican Party that they tried to get Weymouth and DuPont for and Stetzer for stuffing the ballots.
Yeah.
And that was the grand jury investigation in which
you
I was.
DuPont, you mean Frank.
Yes. And I was general counsel. And you remember they had a young fellow by the name of Parker from Richmond who was special counsel. And he wanted to put everybody in jail. And I'll never forget one nice Saturday morning while I'm shaving, ready to go down to the office. I always loved to work Saturday because nobody was in the office and I could do my thing. When the maid downstairs said, Mr. Marshall's here to see you. I says, who's Mr. Marshall? So he says, Mr. Young, I'm so-and-so, Marshall, U.S. Marshall. I've got a subpoena for you before the grand jury. And the subpoena was that they were investigating me as having told all of the witnesses that when they appear before the grand jury, they should not talk, well, which was a lie. And of course, after that, what's his name, who was head of the, he was a professor of economics in Delaware and then became head of the Continental.
American International Bank.
Yeah, he was on the.
Gould.
No, not Gould. It'll come to me.
G-O-U-L-D?
No, not Gould. Well, at any rate.
He went to the International Bank.
No, it wasn't Gould.
Oh, okay.
But anyhow, as a result of that investigation, Stu Lynch was then attorney, the U.S. attorney. Parker got fired. And the only one that went to jail, unfortunately, was Cann, who, instead of telling the truth that he had printed so many ballots, lied about the ballots and...
What Frank DuPont told me one time, he said he used to deal in cash, now he deals in... Then he was dealing with checks. He never, always wrote checks, but never dealt in cash anymore. So.
Do you remember the big case that I handled, the alienation of affections case with Harry Mag from Dover,
oh,
the $100,000
yeah.
suit, in which they had a picture of my client with this woman, and both exposed, and here it is, alienation suit warrants, center of legal dispute, defense attorney, $100,000 action says rights are invaded, and so forth and so on. We won that case, and that was a terrific, that was a bullock.
Dan, when you talk about your cases, you've often talked about the fact that the judges were related to the lawyers, were related to the
oh,
judges of race
well,
law.
Well, I would try the case before three judges, and one of them was Judge Richards, sitting on the bench, and the prosecuting attorney was Bob Richards, his nephew. And in civil cases, sometimes I would have Richards and Layton, and Layton's brother was on one side, and Richards' nephew was on one side.
They were a tribe. He was a son of a bitch, wasn't he? What did you think of Chief Justice Layton?
I thought he was bright as hell.
Yeah, I know.
But he was a terror. And when you'd walk into court, Bill, you did not know whether you're going to be put on trial.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something.
He ordered that woman hanged down in
the... This was the only case that I ever tried for the prosecution, which I got a verdict of guilty for hanging John Elbert. And I didn't feel good about it either.
Did he hang?
No. They finally got the commutation sentence.
So now we went down to Georgetown.
All right.
He wouldn't let us go to the hanging.
Layton
wouldn't let us get into the hangar.
Oh, he wouldn't?
Anyway, when you wanted to go for Attorney General,
yeah.
Then there was a problem, wasn't it? Duffy wanted it.
Oh, Duffy was dying to get it.
What was he then? Was he deputy?
He was deputy. He had been deputy for some years. He was almost a career man.
Yeah.
But he had made so many enemies, particularly with labor.
What's that big headline there?
Habeas corpus would file for three serving life terms for rape. The Curran McGuire case.
That's a strange case. What year was that, 49, 48?
This is, I don't know what the hell, look at this. There's Taylor, who's a lawyer now. Have heard many fine compliments on your AM remarks. Sorry had to go to Rapid City. I don't know what the hell that is. Mr. Frank, frankly speaking, the eminent Attorney General of the State of the eminent Attorney General of the State of Delaware, Mr. H. Albert Young, should give us an opinion as to whether, this is where he gives me out, as to whether or not the Honorable Thomas E. Peaney, State Senator and Chairman of the Board of the Department of Public Safety, can legally hold down these two positions. That's the subject of this morning's discussion, and so forth and so on.
Thompson, yeah, called him the Iron Duke. He loved that.
Oh, yes.
He was a straight lace son of a bitch.
Oh, he was tough. You know, when I think of them today.
Oh, I remember that.
Young orders probe on Ridgely's action in the Kent Auto case. I tell you.
That broke Mrs. Ridgely's heart. She disowned him.
Isn't that something?
He was not disbarred. He's really sensitive.
No.
That's where family. What did
frankly
I
speaking,
say? What did I say now?
Today's piece is about Ridgely case. And the burden of my theme is, let us pause before we pass judgment one way or the other on any individual.
Yeah, I like Ridgely.
Yeah. Yeah. And the argument opened on the duel there was my friend John W. Davis. Best of success, Dad. Wish I could have come to hear you love, Stuart.
Where was he? At Los?
Williamstown.
He was in Williamstown. Did I ever show you what John W. Davis wrote to me?
suspended, that was it.
Yeah, he was suspended for a
Young or is he suspended?
Hmm.
Well, the mom's no you was, huh?
No, Christ. Pressures. Frank, please speaking again. There's bound to be some lasting reform in the Attorney General's office. The next session of the General Assembly or the one after that may do something about getting at least the Deputy Attorney Generals out of the private law practice. You were ahead of your time. You were, you were way ahead. They don't realize, frankly speaking again, what the hell like keep all these things?
Oh, we got thousands of them then.
Don't you think it would be a good idea for reporters to go out on certain assignments with tape recorders? Why? Well, simply because there are some meetings where members of the agency or board say one thing during the meeting and then turn around and say, no, we didn't do any such thing.
We do it now.
That's what makes sense.
Trial begins in Rev case.
Hi, I'm going to have to leave.
Would you have lunch with me?
Come back, I gotta go back to the office.
I'd love you to have lunch with me.